WBCA Radio is proud to present City Talk, where fascinating conversation is alive and well, with your host, Boston radio veteran, Ken Meyer.
Every once in a while in your life, you run across someone who has the knowledge that you wish you had, but also whose friendship is pure gold. And Donna Halper fits that description A1. Donna, it's good to have you back.
Oh my God, it's great to be back. But when you say like every now and then we have somebody who's really knowledgeable, I'm like, yeah, they couldn't be there, but Donna's on today. So we'll just do the best we can do. You think I'm knowledgeable, eh?
Yes, definitely. Now,
you know what? Over the years, I've been a big fan of radio. And a lot of people ask me, like, you know, isn't radio today completely unimportant? It's peripheral to people's lives. I really have to disagree with that. Wouldn't you disagree with it as well?
I've loved radio ever since I was 8 years old. And I haven't stopped. I don't listen to what I used to listen to back in the days when I first started working at WBZ. I was a big fan of Jerry Williams, and I produced the 50th anniversary for WBZ and Jerry Williams.
Yes, you did.
Whom I thought in the beginning I was deathly afraid of, but found out as I went along there was nobody nicer in the world than Jerry Williams. Mm-hmm. He was the best. But the question
really is, okay, and let me just get your opinion. I understand that right now we're on the radio, and you and I have loved radio for years. But increasingly, when I ask my students how many of them listen to radio, fewer and fewer and fewer. Now, I happen to still believe in radio. I still believe that radio is an important part of the media mix. Is it as influential as it was, you know, 30, 40 years ago? Of course not. But every mass medium has to go through change and adaptation, every single one of them. So what do we do to get more young people interested in radio, if I might ask?
Get rid of cable TV.
Oi. You know something? The core, cable TV is running into trouble too. More and more young people are cutting the cord. More and more young people are preferring streaming audio and streaming video. More and more young people are saying, hey, why should I pay a humongous amount of money to get a bunch of stuff that I don't even watch? So,
well,
cable's in a state of transition just like radio is.
We use YouTube in this house.
Yep.
And it's part of the internet, and it doesn't cost as much as cable.
Absolutely.
And we have more stuff available to us now on YouTube than we did when we had cable.
Absolutely.
So,
and a lot of young people don't realize or don't think about the fact that some of the folks that they are hearing or seeing on YouTube have been radio personalities. And podcasting is still a thing. There's, you know, it seems to me there are things that we can do. And since I know you told me you want to talk about children's shows and stuff like that, that's where kids used to be apprenticed into listening to radio and later watching television. They had their favorite children's show. And then as they got older, they'd watch other stuff. I see a lot of programs on TV today that look to me more like extended commercials for products than they do like children's programs.
Yeah, I remember watching BZ sometimes in the middle of the night when I couldn't sleep, and they had what you would call infomercials.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, they would advertise a 7 or 8 CD set of Carol Burnett, or they would advertise music from the 50s, and they would call it Your Hit Parade.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't...
Which was show. Your Hit Parade was a show that started on radio.
It started on radio with Frank Sinatra. It started on radio with Frank Sinatra.
Yep.
And I'm not up anymore at 3:30 in the morning.
Well, so why not?
Because I've decided to become sensible and go to sleep.
Now, see, I'm a night person, so I am up at 3:30 in the morning. Not every morning, but sometimes. Because back in the day, they used to expect women announcers to be on the air late at night and sound sexy.
When listen to old tapes of people like Jerry Williams, or
he did not
Larry
sound sexy.
No, but he was smart.
Oh, he really was. He really was. Now, he wouldn't let kids on his show. He was really strict about that. You have to be over 21. Now, how he policed that, your guess is as good as mine, but...
I've told this story before, and maybe I've told it to you, but I was in the control room one night, or no, I was listening at home, and Jerry did a 15 or 20 minute monologue about something. I don't know. It was an article on either the Globe or the Herald, one of the papers, and he did a whole big monologue on it. And the phones started ringing, and he told his producer, he said, listen, don't screen the calls. Just punch any line up, and I guarantee you they will not talk about what I just did. And sure enough, producer punched up a call, and the first thing the caller said was, Jerry, were you ever on Community auditions? Jerry just lost it.
Oh, I know. I am on every few weeks on WBZ with Morgan White. And Morgan will have a topic, because Morgan, as many of you know, just loves trivia, loves popular culture. He and I have been friends for years. I'm sure you're friends with him as well. He'll pick a topic, and the topic for tonight is blah, blah, blah. And we'll be talking about blah, blah, blah. We'll take a call, and invariably, the person, are you going to have trivia at the club next week? You know, and it's like, we're not talking about trivia at the club next week, you know?
Right.
But, well, it's I was a DJ. I know that you also DJed. When I was a DJ, invariably, I would play a song, let's say, by the Beatles. Okay, so I'm playing a song by the Beatles, and I'd take a request, and the person would be like, are you ever going to play the Beatles? we're playing the Beatles right now. Oh, I'm not listening. If you're not listening, then how do you... But these are things that happened.
Are your students as interested in the media as they used to be?
No. One of the things that I think has happened is that there is so much information out there. And when I say information, I'm not just talking politics. I'm talking entertainment. I'm talking sports. It can be overwhelming. I mean, Bruce Springsteen sang about 55 channels and nothing on. Now we got 500 channels, and we've got various other means of listening and being entertained or watching, as the case may be. I think a lot of my students really feel overwhelmed. In fact, I think even adults right now feel overwhelmed. There's a certain fatigue that's setting in. We see this in politics. It's like, oh my God, I am so tired of hearing about this politician or that politician. It just seems like everything is a giant argument, and people are just tired. They're exhausted. Plus, it's really hard to know what's real and what isn't these days. And I'm not talking about delusions. I'm talking about, thanks to AI, thanks to deep fakes, thanks to misinformation and its cousin disinformation, you can hear stuff on the air that sounds legit, but it's not legit at all. And the amount of misinformation that is online these days is just terrifying. And here again, I think people feel overwhelmed. It's kind of like, you know, let me just watch a basketball game and not think about any of this, you know? I'm not surprised that the women's basketball championships got the humongous numbers that they did. I'm glad that women's sports or the college basketball games, I'm glad they're having a moment. I've been howling for years about the fact that women's college basketball is really entertaining, okay? But not a lot of people gave it a try. Caitlin Clark has been very, very good for college basketball, but she's not the only one. I just think people were looking for something new. They were looking for something entertaining. They were looking for something they could bond with. And the college game for women right now is really, really entertaining. So there's nobody yelling at anybody. Well, yeah, the coaches, I suppose, now and then. But I'm saying it's basically like people just playing at a really high level. You can watch it. It's fun. I think people still watch sports in general because of that, because it's not something where there's going to be a lot of controversy unless, of course, a ref messes up a call or something like that. It's just something you can watch for a while, turn off your mind, not have to think about it. And I, you know, there's not a lot of that kind of stuff out there. When I was growing up, when you were growing up, talk radio did not used to be an argument because of the fairness doctrine. You had hosts that had very definite views on stuff, but they didn't scream at people. They didn't call them names. There were a few exceptions, Joe Pine being one. But in general, you could listen, for example, here in Boston to David Brudnoy. God rest David's soul. We were friends for four decades. He and I agreed on nothing politically. But it didn't matter, because on his show, if you had intelligent ideas and you could express them intelligently, he loved to debate. He loved to discuss. But if you started name calling or insults, he would squash you like a bug. It was like, boom, you're disconnected. He just wanted to have an intelligent conversation. And I really feel like that's something we're missing. It's city after city, all there is, and I know that some people are going to get upset with me, but sorry, this is my opinion, and the facts bear me out on this. In city after city, if you're listening to AM, all there is conservative, right-wing, angry talk radio. There are cities when there's nothing else. And if you are constantly listening to angry, argumentative broadcasts, that's going to have an effect on you. And I really believe the kids can't relate to any of that. They just want to be entertained. You know that old song, Girls Just Want to Have Fun? I think the kids, God bless them, I think they just would like to have some entertainment. And you know what? I don't think they're alone. I mean, I'm 77, still adorable, but I'm 77. And
hey, we're the same age.
I like entertainment. I like to be able to just turn on a show where you don't have people screaming at each other. I like to hear the hits. I like to hear personality announcers. I don't care what channel. I don't care what station. If they're entertaining, I want to listen to them. Now, I've been talking an awful lot. I do that. You pay me by the word. But I'm curious. What do you think about my assessment of the situation? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you think I'm totally off base? What?
No, I agree with you. I don't listen to talk radio as much as I used to. I just don't care for it. I don't think that the talk show hosts that are around now have the caliber or the temperament that they used to have when I first started here in Boston. When I started here in Boston, you had WRKO, you had WHGH, you had WBZ, you had WMEX, you had people like Steve Fredericks, Jerry Williams, Larry King had a talk show on that I used to listen to on Saturday nights. You had Larry Glick. And those
Brudnoy came along.
Brudnoy. I didn't listen to him that much, only because I'm not a political person.
What's interesting is that he got his start doing theater reviews. He was quite the expert on theater reviews.
The only thing that I used to enjoy with Brudnoy was that on New Year's Eve, he would emphasize the problem of alcohol, and he would drink on the air, and as the night went on, he had more trouble doing his program, but still managed to do it, and it just demonstrated what could happen if you drank too much alcohol. Other than that, I didn't listen to him too much. I enjoyed his movie reviews when I heard them once in a while.
Let me posit something else, if I may.
Sure.
I think one of the problems with radio today is we don't have a farm team, okay? When you and I were growing up, back before the dinosaurs came, when you and I were growing up, you got your start in college radio. You did. I did. All of our friends did. Some of our enemies did. But the point is, if you wanted to develop your craft, you went to a community college, a junior college, as they were called back then, or you went to a four-year college, but you found the college radio station. And college radio was where you really got started and honed your craft. If you couldn't go to college, you went to a small market and you learned how to do radio there. And there were a lot of very entertaining personality DJs that worked their way up to large markets by getting their start in the smalls. But today, there's nowhere for young people who want to go into radio to learn their craft. Most of the small market stations are now automated or syndicated. They got gobbled up during media consolidation. And many of the college stations have gone off the air. Now, there are still some really good college stations. But I'm just saying that in general, the places where you used to develop aren't available anymore. And I've also noticed, particularly with talk radio, that a lot of people, I know I singled out conservative talk radio, and that's because 95%, and I'm not making this up, 95% of talk radio is conservative. If it were liberal, I promise you I'd be saying the same thing. I don't think that one-sided anything is good for people. I think people really do need to hear both sides, and I really do miss the fairness doctrine. But that having been said, I think that a lot of conservative talk show hosts just modeled themselves after Rush Limbaugh. So we got like 90,000 Rush Limbaugh clones. We had the same problem in Top 40 and Album Rock. People would like model themselves after Howard Stern. And I'd always say to people, you know, the world doesn't need another Howard Stern. The world doesn't need another Rush Limbaugh. We already have them. So develop your own personality. But if you're going into the industry today, who do you model yourself after?
Yeah, when I was in college, I lived at the radio station.
Oh, yeah.
It was Carrier Current, which meant it didn't go very far. And if you were lucky, you could get it in the dormitory or sit outside the studio and listen to it that way.
The mice would run the treadmill. And
yeah, yep. But I learned how to do radio. I did sports, God bless us all. Twice a day, I did we had a magazine program from 9 to 10 in the morning called Calendar. And I would do a commentary on whatever I wanted to. And then at night, I would do a commentary on whatever we would, there were three or four of us that would determine what the top story of the day was. And I would do a commentary off the top of my, as my teacher used to say, little pointed head. And that was my introduction to radio. And I took the advice of one of my instructors who said, read anything you can find as far as a book or anything on radio itself. Read, as he put it, voluminously. And I always kid him because he said to us on our first day, he said, for your homework assignment, just listen to the radio. Just listen. And I still am in touch with him, and I see him and I'll say to him, Dick, you know what? I'm still carrying out your homework assignment, and it ain't nearly as much fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember, and this is going to sound like trip down memory lane. Oh, yeah, you know, there go the geezers talking about the old days. But no, I'm talking about the purpose of media, which, if you've ever taken any courses in it, what is the purpose of, you know, to inform, to entertain, to transmit the culture? I mean, how do people learn about the culture? How do people learn about what's going on in society? That kind of thing. I mean, we can mock Taylor Swift all we want, but she's a very important person right now. So, of course, you're going to talk about her. Whatever the top story is, whether it's pop culture, whether it's sports, whether it's news, whether it's whatever, whatever's got top of the mind awareness for people. And when I was in college radio in the late 60s, what had top of the mind awareness? The war in Vietnam. That was on everybody's mind. And AM Top 40, because there was still music on AM and a lot of it. Everything hadn't switched over to FM yet. And yep. On AM was very reticent to play anything controversial. So that became one of the big differences between AM and FM. AM you know, Top 40, they would not play a song that was controversial. But us on FM, yeah, we would. We'd play it. And we did. Maybe you have some memories of that, Kenny.
When I that's funny, because when I first started at BZ, there was a song that was out by two guys named Brewer and Shipley.
Oh, sure. I choke over the line.
Exactly. And I can remember walking into my program director's office and hearing him reading the lyrics to that song to the national program director of Westinghouse in New York. And I walked in and I'm hearing, "One toke over the line, sweet Jesus, one toke over the line." And they decided not to play that song.
When I was the music director at WHDH in like 1979, we were still going through that. You know, if a song was too sexual, if a song was too suggestive, they really took it seriously that they wanted to be family friendly. And if that's your format, I respect it. But I still remember when radio was the tastemaker, particularly when FM radio came along as a resource for college-age students. You know, back when it was progressive rock. It wasn't called album-oriented rock yet. It was progressive rock. And I remember the first day we got our hands on Ohio by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Four Dead in Ohio. Some of you may remember the song, 1970. And AM was agonizing over whether they should play it or not, because it was like, you know, Tin Soldiers and Nixon coming. We're finally on our own. You know, they just like go after Nixon, who Neil Young did not like. And I wasn't fond of him either. And the reality was that was a song we could play. And our audience really, really related to it. But AM really agonized over, you know, should we play an anti-war song? They did play some by the late 60s, but they were extremely cautious.
I can remember, you talk about AM, I can remember at the time, the two stations that I used to listen to in the daytime were WRKO and WMEX. And you had guys on the air like Joel Cash, Chuck Knapp.
Oh, sure. Chuckles Knapp.
Yep, exactly. Larry Justice, Mel Miller, you know, and they would pepper their beginnings of a song with a recording of three in a row. And they would play three songs in a row with no interruption.
Oh, yeah.
So AM was still, it was the WRKO was using, as they called it then, the Bill Drake format.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were. I am looking, even as we speak, I will hold this up to the radio. I am looking at a WRKO survey. For those that don't know me, I don't just talk a lot. I'm a media historian, and I've got a pretty massive collection of surveys, memorabilia, you know, lanyards, you know, stuff from the history of broadcasting from like the 20s up until the present day. So I just pulled out a survey. And back in those days, this one's from 1970. It's got Tom Kennedy on the air. Tom's alive and well. But every week they would put out a survey of the top songs. And let's see, number one, in October of 1970, I'll Be There by the Jackson 5. Number two, We've Only Just Begun by the Carpenters. I'm not going to do the whole survey, but Green Eyed Lady by Sugarloaf. By the way, had a hit song that was one of my favorite songs ever, Don't Call Us, We'll Call You, which is a satire of the music industry. If you can find it on YouTube, it's hilarious. Let's see, what else is a big hit on here? Indiana Wants Me by Ardeen Taylor. That was a great song.
Yep, I remember that. Yep.
Yep. Cracklin' Rosie by Neil Diamond.
Oh, yeah.
Neil was wonderful to me. I had a chance to interview him for ABC Radio. He could not have been nicer. He could not have been more courteous. I mean, really. Let's see here. Oh, Montego Bay. I remember Montego Bay. What a great
song. I remember it too. Yep.
And Lola by the Kinks with one of the great endings. The last verse of that song is a masterclass in ambiguity. I mean, they were worried about what they could or could not get on the radio. And the last verse is like, and I'm not the world's most masculine man, but I know what I am, and I'm glad I'm a man, and so's Lola. did he just say that Lola's a man, or did he just say that Lola is glad that he's a man? If you were going to get stuff played on Top 40, the only way you could do it was by being ambiguous. Do you remember listening to Dale Dorman?
Oh, gosh, Dale Dorman, yep.
What a sweetheart he was. One of the nicest people I ever met. Just the nicest. So anyway, long story short, and this is a long digression, I really think that there used to be, and this is not, oh, the good old days, because trust me, as somebody who did not get equal pay, did get sexually harassed, and was not treated like the guys were treated, because back then women were just entering the industry and a lot of people didn't want us there. So there's a part of me that's like, I will always love radio and I will always be grateful that I had a chance to work in the industry for four decades, but it wasn't all fun and games. But still, the one thing I will always remember was that radio was embedded in the community. It wasn't voice tracked from 50 miles away, okay, or 100 miles away. It wasn't necessarily automated. Those people you were listening to, they lived in that community. They worked in that community. There was a very good chance you might see them or meet them. I remember going down to Paragon Park in the to see Bruce Bradley in the Sun Deck studio and live remotes. Oh my God, those were so much fun to watch. And I really feel to some degree that the internet has been a mixed blessing. And no, yep. I'm not, you know, doing like, all you kids get off my lawn. I'm not saying that at all. I love the internet. We're on it right now. I yep. love the internet. The internet is fine. But I feel like the internet, rather than bringing people together, has made people more isolated. I mean, yeah, we were listening to the radio back on the day. But like I said, that station did remotes. It did contests. It did events. It sponsored dances. It was something that was in the community. You were part of it, and you could go see those people. A lot of the young people growing up today, yeah, they see a bunch of stuff online. They're never going to meet those people. And the people they're talking to on social media, they're never going to meet them either. And as a result, like I said, I really feel like we've got a whole bunch of people communicating online, but not necessarily meeting each other in person the way they used to. Robert Putnam, P-U-T-N-A-M, he's a sociologist, still alive, works at Harvard, wrote a wonderful book way back when. He first wrote an essay called Bowling Alone, about how activities, even in the 1990s, as the internet came along, people were becoming more and more isolated. They were hanging out in their houses looking at screens rather than getting out and joining bowling leagues or, you know, becoming members of Kiwanis or, you know, Order of the Eastern Star or whatever. Volunteerism, it was more singular activity. And radio used to be this large conversation with the community. But as I said, because it was in the community, you were part of it. So Robert Putnam wrote this book called Bowling Alone, based on his essay. And he's just written a new one that kind of updates it. And he really does make this point where the internet absolutely brings us together. I'm going to be giving a talk at a university in Kampala, Uganda, while I sit in my house wearing my little bunny slippers. Could never do that years ago. Sure, I could wear my little bunny slippers, but the chances of my giving a talk at the university in Uganda? Not gonna happen, okay? Nobody's gonna fly me to Uganda. It's outrageously expensive. But today, I can do it. I can speak at a university in England. I can speak at a university in Australia. It's amazing. That's the good news. The bad news is, like I said, we're like 25 players and 25 cabs. We're like, each one of us has our own little silo where we get our own little information. And what's the thing that brings us together? It used to be radio. What is it today?
The internet.
Yeah, but does it bring us together?
I like the internet for...
Oh, so do I, absolutely. But I'm saying I think it's a mixed blessing.
Yep. As Jordan Rich says in his book that he wrote, does anybody remember Static? Which is a great line.
Indeed.
I mean, I use the internet a lot for sports.
Of course.
You know, I can sit here and listen to John Miller in San Francisco with FM quality and have a ball.
Absolutely. I'm not dissing the internet, but in some ways you're making my point. What are chances that you're going to meet John Miller? Whereas
probably
when I was
not
growing
good
up,
anymore.
The chances of my meeting Bruce Bradley were pretty good. Jerry Williams? Yep. I could probably meet him. Not like me, Donna, but I'm saying listeners could go to events where these people were. And it was so cool. I still remember how excited I was watching them do their thing. I mean, you could get prizes. They did dances. Back to the community auditions thing. You could be in the studio audience.
Yep. I remember I used to work with Bruce at BZ. And let me add that Bruce Bradley was one of the nicest people in the world. He was adorable. And I used to go to some of the remotes at Paragon Park just to see it work.
Absolutely.
And hang out in the trailer with Bruce or Dave Maynard or whatever. And these guys, used to go to, they would go to record hops. They would go to the, you were right.
That was exactly my point. And I'll tell you something about the power of radio even today. So I'm on with Morgan White a couple of months ago. And I always, whenever I'm going to be on, I let people know on my social media so that if they want to listen on the internet, great, that's the good news. They can listen from almost anywhere. And I had a friend, let's call her Jane, okay? So I had a friend, Jane, who's listening from, let's say, Oklahoma, but it's really far away from Boston, okay? And I said to Morgan, my friend Jane is a professor in Oklahoma, and she's listening online. Can I give her a shout out? And he said, sure. So I'm like, you know, it's really great that all of you are listening online, and I particularly want to say hi to Jane at the university. She went nuts. You would have thought I gave her $1 million, okay? People still appreciate that personal touch. People still appreciate when you can hear that the announcer knows who you are or knows your name, or you're the, you know, the eighth caller and you won something. I wish we could go back to not a time when there was, you know, all the stuff that there was in the early days, including static, but I wish we could go back to a time when radio was a fixture in the community, because I wonder, answering my original question, I wonder if kids grew up with radio, if they'd have more attachment to it.
I did, but I still managed to watch stuff on a Saturday morning. I would get up and I would watch Howdy Doody at 10 o'clock. I would watch Rough and Ready at 10:30. I would watch,
of course,
Fury.
Yeah. Absolutely. But Kenny, it's not a zero-sum game. It's not either or, okay? My favorite media critic is a guy named Neil Postman. And if you haven't read Amusing Ourselves to Death, you really should, because it explains a lot of things that are happening today. Amusing Ourselves to Death was written in 1985, updated in 2005. I know it's a little bit dated, but the concepts are there, okay? The concepts are important about how everything turned into entertainment when television came along. Everything. Politics, serious stories. Everything became about ratings and everything became about entertainment. So what I wanted to say about Postman's theory, and I agree with him 100%. Postman said, just because a new medium comes along, it doesn't mean the old media are just like going to disappear. They're not erased. It's just that people's time and attention expand to include that new mass medium. So yeah, I still listen to radio. I still watch television. I still use the internet. You know, all of those things are still part of my life, and they haven't erased all the media that came before them. I just don't have as much time for one mass medium like I used to. Now I divide my time up between all of them. So I'm not surprised when you say that, like, you loved radio, but you also loved television. Why not? And you love the internet, because otherwise we wouldn't be having this conversation now, would we?
Yeah, you're right. Yep, absolutely. And one of the things that I like about the internet happened most recently. I was and am a big fan of the TV show Quincy.
Oh, yeah.
Jack Klugman.
Yes.
I love that show. Loved it. Somebody, a friend of mine, sent me the entire series via email. I have 7 years of that television show in an email. You couldn't have done that years ago.
Oh, indeed.
You can do it. You can do it now. I watch Quincy every day.
Absolutely. Another thing, if you go online, not like you, but anyone, if you go online, it is amazing the stuff that people have posted to YouTube. Now, in many cases, there is no music video because music videos were not a thing back then. But you can hear songs that you haven't heard in years, okay? I went online, I went on YouTube, and I found Dick Rossmeany, Little Brown Dog. Now people are going, who? What? Well, there used to be a folk music program on WBZ called Hootenanny when I was in college. And Jefferson K was the first host. And he used to use as one of his theme songs this really cool guitar piece called Little Brown Dog. In fact, I use it for my ringtone. And I found it on YouTube. I found a whole bunch of old songs that I hadn't heard in years. And it was really fascinating to take that little trip down memory lane, in addition to keeping up with what's current. So I feel like I've really sidetracked us because I know that before we went on the air, you talked about wanting to talk about children's shows. And I apologize if I've sidetracked you, but one of the
Don't
things
worry
I
about it.
became aware of with respect to YouTube, a lot of times you watch a show that you remember from when you were a kid, but watching it as an adult, you get an entirely different experience of it. Has that ever happened to you where
Oh,
you
yeah.
watch something as a kid, it meant one thing, you watch it as an adult, and you're like, wow, I missed that, and I didn't know what that meant, and
When I was growing up, I was a big fan of Danny Thomas. I loved that show. Absolutely loved it. Every Monday night at 9 o'clock with Maxwell House Coffee, we watched Danny Thomas. Now, when I watch it, I can appreciate the fact of the writing that was involved in that show
My point exactly. Yes.
and how clever the writers were. And how good the actors and actresses were at acting out the parts. I interviewed Marjorie Lord once, who played Danny's wife for a long time. And she said to me then, she said, we had a staff of wonderful writers. And I never realized how wonderful they were until I started watching the show on YouTube. And I just sit back and say, wow, she was right. And
Absolutely.
I find a lot of stuff on YouTube. Fury was a staple in our house at 11 o'clock every Saturday morning. I go back now and I watch that stuff. And I remember when I first had a tape recorder. If it was on television and available, I taped it on reel to reel. I don't have the reels anymore, but I can go back and watch them now on YouTube, and I can't tell you the memories that it brings back with Sky King.
Oh,
I'm up in
yeah.
a co-pilot seat.
Absolutely. Even some of the children's shows, like Major Mudd, was a big deal in Boston. Ed McConnell, God rest his soul, Ed McDonnell, rather, died of diabetes way back in like 1979. But when I was in college, I used to watch Major Mudd sometimes. And no, I wasn't the target audience, but there were so many clever puns and things that, Ernie Kovacs on a national level was very, very adept at that. Johnny Carson, you watch stuff and it was like, yeah, there was the slapstick of the funny stuff, but then there was the stuff where you had to think about it. And I have the feeling that a lot of the writers were very well aware that TV back then was a family affair. And so they had some jokes in there that the kids would get. And then they had some stuff that the parents would get. And I think they still do that today. I've watched Family Guy, same deal. Some of that stuff is just, yeah, that's pretty funny. And some of it is like, wow, that's really clever. You know who else used to do that stuff? And we're talking way back when? The Three Stooges. Now, I know a lot of people, when they think Three Stooges, they think pies in the face and fingers in the eye and stuff like that. The Three Stooges were among the first to go after Hitler. They did some satire on Hitler, and they got away with it at a time when we were still supposed to be neutral. But hey, they were just comedians, you know? They were like the joker, you know, the fool in literature. It's like, what? I'm just the fool. I was just joking, you know? But they
were. Boy, you mentioned one of my heroes, and that's Johnny Carson.
Oh, yeah.
And I go back now and watch some of that stuff. And when he used to be on, I would be up at 11:30 because I would watch Johnny Carson. I loved Johnny Carson. Now I'm in bed at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and I wouldn't think of staying up at 11:30 to watch the Colbert Report or whatever. I don't even know what.
See, I used to love to watch Carnac the Magnificent.
Oh, yeah. I loved that. Yeah.
No, but those were the kinds of things that, to me, they were hilarious, but they were also very clever. You had to really understand language, and you had to really understand the puns that they were making.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
They had to work around network censorship all the time. So they couldn't work blue. You know, they couldn't say stuff that was like dirty. So it was a battle to get away with as much stuff as you could.
Yeah, I loved Carnac too. I sealed in a Funkin' Wagnalls jar until noon today.
Absolutely. Yep. And I used to watch the Smothers Brothers. I thought they were incredibly clever. They used to get on the wrong side of the network censors all the time.
Yep. Yep. Every Sunday night. Yep. The Smothers Brothers. Yeah. Tommy and
Dickie.
Oh, Dickie. Yeah. That was the other Smothers Brother I couldn't think of. Yeah. They were a riot.
But
they were wonderful.
Talking about children's shows in Boston, of course, I remember the national shows like Howdy Doody and stuff like that. But here in Boston, everybody in every city had a Bozo the Clown. And Bozo the Clown was like a syndicated name. It was a house name. You purchased it, and then you got to be Bozo. And here in Boston, of course, it was Frank Abruzz. You want to talk about nice people. Did you ever work with him?
I never worked with him. I met him, but I never worked with him. I certainly knew who he was. I knew the voice. I couldn't help but know the voice because when he was alive, he did just about everything, all booth announcing. And
now that had to be being Bozo, just like being Big Brother Bob Emery. To do a live children's show back then, you never knew what the kids were going to do. You just didn't, okay? The idea that they'll all sit very peacefully during the, you know, 1 hour of taping or this or that, nah. It was always something.
Yeah, I mentioned Howdy Doody records before. I have Bozo the Clown records.
Do you?
I have Bozo at the Circus. I have Bozo and the Birds and Bozo and his rocket ship.
Now, that was the national Bozo, right? Do you have or were these local records?
No. This was the national one. This was Larry Harmon.
I was going to say it was probably Larry Harmon if it was the national one.
Yep. And there would be a picture book with him. And when you heard him blow his whistle, you turned the page.
Yep.
And I had a lot of these. I found Bozo at the Circus on YouTube, and they had the date as 1946 when it came out. That's the year that I was born. So I must have been 6 or 7 years old when we found it in a store and bought it.
Now, do you remember, speaking of whistles, do you remember a local TV show with Willie Whistle?
Yeah. Yep, I remember it.
And there was a big mystery about, like, who is he? And everybody was trying to guess.
It was Channel 38. It was Dick Beach, wasn't it?
Absolutely. But some people thought it was Dana Hersey, and it wasn't.
I love Dana Hersey.
Yep.
I loved him.
Dick Beach, from what everybody tells me, I never got to meet the guy. I mean, I met people on other stations. I never met him. I'm told he was a very, very private guy. And he did not like he was antisocial or anything like that, but he just didn't want to do a lot of meet and greets and have people know who he was. And he liked playing the character, but as far as everybody knowing that he was Dick Beach, nah.
Yeah,
it finally came out, but.
I remember him. I remember I used to watch every Sunday night. Ask the Manager with Joe Dimino and Dana.
Oh,
Hirsch.
Yeah.
I don't know if Dimino's still alive. I think Dana is.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's doing a show up in Maine somewhere.
Rex Traylor, speaking of really nice people who did shows for children in this town?
Yes. I worked with him a couple of years at Massasoit College in Brockton. But I never worked with him in the regular media itself. I know he had something, a production studio, I think of some kind in Waltham.
In Waltham, yes.
But
now,
I
knew him because I was teaching part-time at Emerson. And by that time, he was teaching part-time at Emerson. So we were kind of colleagues for a while. But Boomtown, I wonder how many of your listeners and viewers have recollections of Boomtown, because that was a really cleverly done children's show.
Well, when I started at BZ, it was the beginning of the end of that show.
Oh, I know.
I started at BZ in 71, and I know that it had been going on for an awfully long time.
Yes.
I was never on it like Morgan was. I never watched it, but I knew what it was and what it meant.
And everybody knew the theme song. I mean, everybody could sing along. I'm not going to give you my bad singing, but that whole thing about boom, boom, Boomtown, everybody knew that song.
Yep, they sure did.
And before him was Big Brother Bob Emery.
Big Brother Bob Emery.
Yeah. And Big Brother Bob Emery got his start on radio, as many people did.
Yep.
And it's interesting because you probably have heard this story, but Big Brother Bob Emery, who was a legendary children's show host in Boston. And by the way, there's a whole bunch of myths on the internet about, you know, he swore at the kid. No,
yeah.
No,
yeah.
No, did not happen. It's nonsense. Okay. But that having been said, Big Brother Bob Emery was working, as I recall, I don't recall, I wasn't around. It was 1921. I'm old, but I ain't that old. He was working at the old Gilchrist department store. And someday we'll really take a trip down memory lane and do all of the department stores that aren't there anymore. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Like Zayers.
Zayers. Yep.
Yeah, I remember Zayers.
Caldor's.
Yep. Caldor. Yep.
Leechmere.
Absolutely. Well, he worked at Gilchrist's, and he was in the shoe department, I believe. And back in those days, every single department store had a talent show to keep morale up among the members of the, you know, the employees. And the talent show at Gilchrist's, you could win a prize for being in the talent show. So Bob Emery and three of his colleagues, they form the Gilchrist Quartet. And they win. And they then went on one of Boston's pioneering radio stations, 1XE. The X stood for experimental. It later was renamed WGI, 1921-22. And again, people loved them. And gradually, they loved Bob Emery more than they loved the rest of the group. So it got to be Bob Emery and his ukulele. And then in 1924, he started the Big Brother Club. And he took it over to a new radio station, WEEI. And back then, radio station call letters stood for something. And WEEI stood for Edison Electric Illuminating Company. Because, of course, it was owned by Edison. Yep. And he started the Big Brother Club on radio. It went to the network, over to NBC for a while. I believe he was on Dumont for a while. And then he gradually came back to Boston in the early 50s, had a long career that spanned across, oh my God, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. He finally retired in the late 60s. Mm. The man was a legend.
And that's where we got to end it, because we're just about out of time.
Oh.
But we will have you back, and we will talk about the department stores, and we will talk about Big Brother Bob.
I hope I wasn't boring. I apologize. I just get caught up in this stuff.
Heavens no, not at all.
This is what happens when you have a media historian on your show.
Yep. That's why I love having you, because I never know what we're going to discuss. But we will do this again, I promise.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. You take care of yourself.
Much love.
Same here. Good night, everybody. That'll do it for another edition of City Talk.
Thanks for listening to another great conversation with Ken Meyer and friends. You can contact Ken by email. The address is kjmeyer7@gmail.com. That's kjmeyer7@gmail.com. Tune in next time for more conversation with Ken Meyer on City Talk.